When I was invited to speak on this subject, handling success, I have a feeling that I might have laughed at the time and said, I haven't had any, which is not exactly true, I suppose. But I was thinking in terms of the world in which we live, where there are talks given by management, given by businesses, by institutions, motivational talks to the staff, how to be successful. But that really is not what the Bible means when it talks about success. In my own case, what was in the minds of those who asked me to speak on this subject was the fact that my books have been successful. I've written a lot of books. They are in many, many countries. They've been translated into many, many languages. And I suppose we could give you statistics of how many have been sold and things like that. That might be encouraging, or it might be reassuring, but it is not a measure of success. It's far more difficult to be an evangelist, to be a pastor, to be somebody who's working among people seeking to bring them to Christ and to help them grow in their Christian lives. And that is very difficult to put a value on. It's very difficult to measure. The thing to beware of when we talk about books and things of that nature is that that is not a measure of a person's success. If we are going to measure success by the number of books a person has produced, then we're on the wrong track, and we can give ourselves a false sense of achievement. Many evangelists will preach and work and apparently see little results at times, and pastors having to hassle with people, hassle with churches, all sorts of problems and difficulties, sometimes they could get very frustrated, very disappointed, and maybe feel they're not seeing much progress. Yet they may be achieving more than somebody else is who is producing something that is measurable in terms of statistics. Let me read to you. In fact, you can turn with me if you wish. I have just this one reading. I'm going to refer to a number of scriptures, but I'll start with this reading in Luke 22. It's at the end of the institution of the Lord's Supper. Jesus had said, one of you is going to betray me, and they wonder who this would be. From there, the discussion moved very quickly to a dispute among them in verse 24 as to who was to be regarded as the greatest. He said to them, the kings of the Gentiles, that is the people in power in the world out there, people who don't know God, they exercise lordship over them. But not so among you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as one who serves. For which is the greater, one who sits at table, or one who serves? Is it not the one who sits at table? But I am among you as one who serves. And he had just given them an example of that in washing the disciples' feet. Service is the essential element here. In fact, it's the essential element in all aspects of Christian ministry, Christian life and work. We are here to serve others. We're not here to look for glory or honour or accolades or prestige or achievement in the way the world might measure it. Sometimes people say things to me that indicate that they're thinking along the wrong lines. For example, I've had people say to me, why are you writing material like this? In a very simple, easy-read style of English, you could be producing hefty tomes. You could be producing theological books, books of biblical exposition or whatever that could be geared for a higher audience. That betrays a lot about the person who made the comment. We're here to help people as much as we can. We're not here to launch ourselves into some upward movement whereby we are going to win the complimentary statements that make you feel good. I find it very fulfilling, actually, to be able to help people who really need help and who don't have any great scholastic abilities, who don't have any claims to academic achievements. People who are sincere and enthusiastic about their Christian lives, they're the ones we want to help. We've been working in Murarrie, which is a working class suburb, and we've been working among people who are not Christians. It's not a churched community that we're working in, it's people who were unchurched. In many ways, Murarrie is a bit of a backwater among some of the suburbs of Brisbane. It's the sort of place that a lot of people don't want to live. They'd much rather live in a place that's got more prestige attached to it. Again, when people say, why are you working there? That betrays something about the person who makes the comment. Actually, it's the most rewarding work. Working among people and bringing them to know Christ, seeing them grow in their Christian lives and a church started. We are here to serve people, not to lord it over people, not to seek the highest places or the most prestigious venues in which to work. In Corinthians chapter 3, 1 Corinthians 3, Paul refers to himself and Apollos as servants. There was some conflict in the church, you're aware of it, there was competition. Some people wanted to make themselves a follower of this one or of that one. And Paul says, you're going about it the wrong way. Apollos and I are not in competition, we are both servants. One sows, another reaps. It is only God who gives the increase. Don't measure your success by the amount you're reaping. Somebody else has done the sowing, but only God has given the increase. One of the people who's been a great help to me and a great example, and he did become a friend in due course, and we had quite a bit to do with each other, was F.F. Bruce, who was probably the leading evangelical biblical scholar of the 20th century, the sort of person that most people knew about and was looked upon as an authority. But he was the humblest of men. He went along to a local Christian Brethren assembly in England. He was one of the elders there. On one occasion, somebody asked him how did he get on when he was in a congregation of people where the prayers that were sometimes offered were not all that theologically correct. Maybe he felt some difficulty rubbing along with these people who were doing things and saying things in a way that would not measure up to what he might have been. And he made a comment along these lines. I have no difficulty at all. There is no tension whatsoever. If I found some difficulty with the prayers of my fellow believers, just think what my prayers must be before God. How much further have I fallen short of God and His perfect knowledge? What an attitude to have. A person who could enter into the spirit of worship and service just as one of the ordinary people. In fact, when people got to know him, he had the habit of saying, just call me Fred. People will call him Dr. Bruce, Professor Bruce, not quite sure how to address him. Just call me Fred, he said. And the people in his church, they called him Fred. The story is told of a young fellow in the church who worked in some local, I'm not exactly sure what it was, whether it was a truck depot or a motor mechanics workshop, but he worked with a lot of people who were tied up with that kind of work. But he was a keen witness for the Lord Jesus, and he used to speak to these people about Christian belief and practice. And one day somebody said to him, how is it that you know all this? I mean, you're just one of us here working in the yard, putting petrol in motor vehicles and pushing things around and stacking crates on top of other crates. And you know all about this religious stuff and about the Bible. And he said, there's an old bloke in our church called Fred, and he seems to know everything. And that was so typical. Apparently this worker didn't know that F.F. Bruce was professor of this and that and something else, a senior figure in academia. But there he was as one who serves. This man called Fred, he seems to know everything. Very humble man. In fact, many of the big-time names are humble people. Not all of them, perhaps. In fact, it was F.F. Bruce himself told me of a certain person. I won't say who this person is. But he also has written a lot of books. But he would not go to a meeting if there were fewer than 30 people to speak to. F.F. Bruce was the other way around. He said, I don't care if it's only two or three. If they're students, if they're people out in some farming village, they want some help, it doesn't worry him at all. So some people are very conscious of their own importance or the value of their own time. But in my experience, that is talking to other people who hobnob with these kinds of people more than I do, the really good men at the top are also humble men. I have a friend who is a lecturer in a theological college, and they get visitors from time to time. He said the same. He said, most of the people that visit us are just ordinary people. We don't have any trouble with them. He said, the people we have trouble with are people on my level. We want to big note ourselves or push ourselves ahead of somebody else and work our way up the tree. But the really good people are not conscious of that kind of thing. Always serving others. C.S. Lewis is another person who's helped me greatly through his writings. Obviously, I never knew him. He died many, many years ago. But he helped me so much in my early Christian growth. If people like F.F. Bruce taught me more about the Bible, it was people like C.S. Lewis who taught me more about myself and about Christianity, what sorts of people we should be. He was living with his brother. The two of them were bachelors. They lived in the same house. C.S. Lewis was writing away there doing some study or whatever he was doing. His brother walked into the room and made a comment that there was a tramp just up the street. It was drizzly rain. This fellow was cold and he was sitting under a tree up there sheltering from the weather. And he said, his brother, C.S. Lewis, said, "Oh, poor devil," and just kept on working. He said 2 or 3 minutes later he stood up and he said, "I have just shown myself completely lacking in Christian love." He went into the kitchen, he boiled the kettle, he made a flask of tea, he made some sandwiches, he put them in a container, and he went out into the drizzling rain, walked up the street and gave them to this tramp. That kind of story has been told of him in other contexts, and similar stories could be told of lots of people. That is humility. These are big people. These are successful people. How do they handle it? Well, they don't handle it by sitting down saying, "Well, I've been very successful. I'm an important person." We are all Christians. We're to love each other and we gain greatness in God's sight through service. "I am among you as one who serves," says Jesus. I've been to some big conferences, such as Lausanne 2 in Manila, 1989. There were 4,000 odd people there for the 9-day conference. Amsterdam 2000 in Amsterdam in the year 2000, obviously. 10,000 people there. And the big name speakers in the plenary sessions were people like John Stott and Jim Packer and Chuck Colson and George Carey and a whole lot of other big names in the Christian world. It was very interesting as we moved around to see these men. Some of them, I will admit, were only there for 1 or 2 days because of various other pressures on their time and they came and went. But some of them, such as those I just mentioned, such as J.I. Packer, John Stott, these were there the whole time. Oz Guinness was another one. Michael Cassidy was another one. Gottfried Osiemensa was another one. These were big names in the Christian world. And yet there they were, when they were not speaking, sitting with all the rest of the people up in the stands there. Packer and his wife were there, every session all the way through. The people on the platform were not saying anything that people like Packer and Stott and these had never heard before. They knew so much more. But they didn't consider themselves great. There they were at the meals, queued up with the rest of us, waiting for their meal to be handed out. And so it went on through the conference. They were very accessible to anybody who wanted to walk up to them and talk about anything. James Packer is probably the greatest evangelical theologian of the 20th century. If F.F. Bruce was the leading Bible scholar, Packer would probably be the leading theologian. But very humble men. Talk to anybody there not to big note themselves, but to serve others. One of the things we must do is simply face the facts. God has given us different gifts and we ought to use them. That's what it says in Romans 12:6. If you have gifts, use them. Acknowledge the fact, but no need to hold an opinion about the fact. No need to hold a value on the fact. But accept the fact that we have these gifts, therefore use them. Paul said to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 4, don't neglect the gifts that you have. Practice them. Give yourself to them so that others may see your progress. Very interesting comment. When we start out, a lot of us, we stumble, we make mistakes, we're not all that polished, and people are very gracious, really, in putting up with us. But we ought to apply ourselves in such a way that we are, in fact, getting better. If I preach somewhere, and somebody says, "Well, he was not all that good last time, but at least he's a bit better this time," well, we're getting somewhere, so that others may see your progress. But we don't hold opinions of ourselves in the sense of thinking I am better than somebody else. Don't be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Paul says that in Corinthians 12, the very same chapter that just half a dozen sentences earlier he had said, use your gifts. He comes on later on in the same section and says, but don't be haughty. Associate with the lowly. Mix with ordinary people And don't aim to be seen only with the important people. Going back to Amsterdam 2000, following that, they had what we might call mini Amsterdam 2000s in a lot of countries. At Amsterdam, there were 10,000 people, and the Congress went for about 9 days. But there was a limit as to how many people could go there, so the Billy Graham Association, who sponsored this event, they then ran mini Amsterdams that went for only 5 days, but they were residential conferences, and whereas, let us say, in one of these countries, only 40 could get to Amsterdam, they might have 1,500 or 2,000 at the nationally based conference in their own country. I was invited to run the Bible teaching sessions in quite a number of these countries. When it came to lunchtime, sometimes they arranged for, let us say, the platform party to have their lunch separately in an air-conditioned room. I objected to this. I said, well, why can't we just eat outside with all the rest? Queue up with our plate and get the food given to us and just sit down outside there with all the rest of them. Well, some agreed with me and some didn't. But it seemed to me anomalous that here we are standing up preaching the word but not setting an example. Somehow we are elite and we are off in a separate room by ourselves. And so I said, no, I'm not going to do this. I want to go out there with the rest of them. So I'll line up and get my food and I'll go and sit with someone this time and somebody else next time at that table another time. And consequently got to know lots and lots of people. In fact, at the end of those conferences, they give people a questionnaire to fill in so they get feedback concerning the quality of the teaching or the singing or the accommodation or the food or whatever, whatever. So I put in my comments what I just said to you, that I thought they had to address this issue of treating the so-called platform party as in some way elite to eat their meal in an air-conditioned room while everybody else ate outside. It struck me as being contrary to what Christianity really is. Associate with the lowly. Don't put yourself up in the chief place. Remember what Jesus said? Don't go sit in the top slot. Start at the bottom, he said. The other thing is not to tell lies to ourselves. I'm not a musician, but just supposing I was, and I could play the piano very well, and then there's somebody else in the church who's struggling and doesn't make a very good fist of it. Now, there's no good telling myself that that person is a better pianist than I am. Obviously, the person is not. So I just accept the fact that I can play better, and it's better that I should play the piano in the service. When Paul said in Philippians chapter 2, let each esteem other better than himself, he's not saying, I've got to tell myself that other person is a better pianist than I am. Well, I know that is not the truth. But I am to esteem that person as a better person than I am. I know myself fairly well, and I know that I'm not really a very nice person underneath. I know all the things that other people don't see. I have to give the other person the benefit of the doubt and say, well, that person surely can't have had the bad thoughts that I had or the bad attitudes that I had. You esteem the other person better than yourself. You don't tell yourself lies about the other person's gifts. In other words, we try not to think about ourselves, to exalt ourselves. We just keep on serving, just keep on serving. And beware of this danger of self-fulfillment. A lot of people are looking for self-fulfillment, running around wanting to get self-fulfillment. We get self-fulfillment when we don't seek it. Serve others and you'll feel fulfilled. Seek only to serve yourself, satisfy your own ambitions, and in the end I think you'll find they cheat you and leave you feeling only a shell of yourself. So we must cultivate humility and cultivate discipleship of Jesus Christ. Follow the example of Christ. It's what Paul says in chapter 2, that well-known part that we read quite often on Sundays. He's giving us that as an example. He said, let the mind be in you, which was in Christ Jesus. He didn't exalt himself. He made himself of no reputation, and you know how the verses there flow on. Follow the example of Jesus. God called us to humility. When Paul wrote to the Ephesians, he said we have to live lives that are worthy of the calling that we have in Christ Jesus. We live those lives in lowliness and meekness. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. These things are characteristics of the followers of Jesus. Jesus said, I have given you an example when he washed the disciples' feet. Now you go and do likewise. You serve others. I am among you as one who serves. The person who sits at table is greater than the one who washes the feet of the people at the table. But he said, I am the one who serves. That's what you should be. Not thinking of how successful you're going to be, how great you're going to be, how much achievement you're going to effect. Serve others. That's one of the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5. Meekness, gentleness. It's translated by different words in different versions. But it is something that we must actively cultivate. It comes through the work of the Spirit within us as he's transforming us into the likeness of Christ, making us into the sorts of people we should be if we're Christ's followers. And if that is the case, we will not be seeking the highest places for ourselves. I just referred to you a moment ago that story in Luke chapter 14, where Jesus observed people jockeying for position so that they could get the best seats at the function. He used that as an illustration and said that's not the way to go. Learn to be a servant, and other things will follow in due course in their own way and in their own time. Seek the top slots and you'll find it won't get you where you thought you were going to get. Just give your life to service of others. No competition. Remember the mother of the two disciples of Jesus, James and John, two of Jesus' closest disciples. And she wanted to steal a march on Peter by coming to Jesus and saying, can you give these two sons of mine the top places in the kingdom? And Jesus said, that's not the way it works. In my kingdom, he said, it doesn't work that way. We read these verses in Luke similarly. Out there in the hard, cold world, among those who don't know Jesus, certainly that's the way it works. People get to the top by climbing all over the top of other people. Not in my kingdom, said Jesus. You must learn to serve. And again, he gave himself the example, even as the Son of Man came, not to be served, not to be waited on hand and foot, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. We must not view ourselves by comparing ourselves with others. Paul, writing to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians 10, said that is foolishness. Those who compare themselves with others and then rank themselves reasonably well as a result, those people, he says, are without understanding. They are acting foolishly. We only deceive ourselves if we rank ourselves by comparing ourselves with others. It's the worst way to feel superior, by comparing ourselves with other people. Forget about the comparisons. Forget about the competition. That's foolishness. It's something without understanding. Give yourself to the service of others. And in so doing, says Jesus, greatness will come of its own accord. Don't go out there seeking the glory. Don't go out there to be doing something that will be seen by people and bring congratulations. Remember what he says in Matthew chapter 6, whether it's praying or giving or fasting, don't do things to be seen by men. People may congratulate you, they may give praise, but he said it's the only praise you'll ever get. You won't get any praise from the Father for that sort of thing. You get your reward in the comments that people are saying that make you feel good. But that's the only reward you'll ever get. What is true of giving or fasting or praying is true in every other area of our lives. Jesus said in Matthew 23, he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled. Whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Society says, get more. Jesus says, give more. Society says, know more. Jesus says, be more. Society says, achieve more. Jesus says, serve more. Jesus did not go around seeking success. He gave himself for others. I am among you, he said, as one who serves. That is the way the Master went. That is the way we, his followers, must also go.